Daddy couldn't think of the bit before the theme music, so he said I should do it. Daddy's podcast is boring, and it isn't even Christmas. You should listen to my podcast. I'm not complaining with Robert and Juno. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the sharp range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. Yes, do you want to do the interactive bit? Okay, how you doing? Yeah, I'm good, I am, actually, yeah. No, well, last week I was in my pants, and this week I thought, you know what? Let's do it again. Uh-huh. No, I'm not. Okay, fine. And scene. That was the interactive bit. Hope you enjoyed that. God knows what happened there. So, yeah, last episode, I recorded it in my pants. I'm not going to tell you what I'm wearing today because I want you to use your own imagination, because I did get a couple of contrasting emails about the subject. First one comes from Barry Grapefruit. I haven't heard from him in a while. I've missed him. It says, I can't believe you recorded the last episode in your pants. I have been traumatised by this and I'm seeking therapy. I'm sorry about that, Barry, but the second email was from a lady called Claire Dalton, who I believe is incredibly attractive and probably youthful, and it says, Dear Jack, thank you so much for recording the recent episode in your underwear. It has given me wonderful fantasies and dreams for the past week, and I hope you will continue to record episodes in your underwear in future. Now, I did make up the second one of those emails, but I imagine there's probably a woman out there called Claire Dalton who does feel that way. There might be, there might not. Maybe I've got her name slightly wrong, but I imagine that is the case. So, no more discussions about my attire. I have had an email from my best friend, Chris Kavanagh, self-appointed best friend, and you get this way, he's from the States. I forget where in the States. I should know, he's my best friend. And he's in the UK at the moment. He has made no effort to try and visit me. He's gone to visit his wife's family in Cheltenham. Now, I studied in Cheltenham. Oh, goodness me, that's about nearly 15, 16 years ago. So I spent a good couple of years living there. I know the city well. It's about 100 miles from where I live. I cycled there once. Actually, that's a lie. I tried cycling there and I gave up about 5 miles from the end. I was just done in because it's actually almost all uphill. But then at the end of the term, I cycled all the way back. And it was no problem because it's pretty much all downhill. It's fantastic for 100 miles. Not literally, just rolling the whole way. You get the point. Anyway, Chris is in the UK. Can't be asked to come and visit. Thanks, Chris, for nothing. One other thing I do want to mention. I had a couple of messages from people saying that they hadn't heard of any of the songs that Bob Baker sent in to me. But Bob has sent me an email in his defence. And he's put, I feel like I need to defend myself about the troll incident. My choices are fairly modern or alternative. I find it funny that the song everyone was aware of, Better Days, does not mention Christmas once. I do agree that my choices were not huge hits, but they aren't obscure either. I wanted them to be a little challenging, but I did have standards. I had to have heard them on the radio, and they needed to be originals, and I wanted them to be performed by singers or bands that people will have heard of. The irony is, most of these songs are discovered from movies, TV shows and commercials, so they get airplay. And then he says, I only have 40 songs on my Christmas playlist, and all of these songs are on it. I don't think it's about location, because I said it might be an Illinois thing. I think it's more of a genre thing, and what type of music you like and listen to. I tend toward punk, new wave, alternative, which is the style of songs I like, which I think my choices fall in that category. I promise that you can find and hear these in the States, but just not everywhere. So there you go, boys and girls. Bob's defended himself. I stand by what he says. Bob's not a liar. He's a great man. So, yeah, I don't know why no one else has heard of him. Maybe you need to sort of cast your net a bit broader. I don't know. Bob also did say, just a little aside, I did cover snogging in episode 81. I don't know if you remember, but in last episode I used the word snogging, and I said that would be a good word for Bob to cover. Turns out he'd already covered it, and I made a fool of myself. Well, there we go. that's pretty much the housekeeping stuff. Now, let's get on with this.
Jingle, jingle, jingle for a segment.
Boys and girls, last episode I mentioned I'd got an email from Heather Kincaid, and she was saying that she wanted me to talk about Christmas trees. And I don't normally do requests like that because, you know, I do what I'm interested in because I'm selfish like that, boys and girls. But today I thought, do you know what? It's nice to, for someone to reach out, and I thought, why not talk about the history of Christmas trees? Now, I know other podcasts have already covered this. Podcasts far greater than mine. However, I'm doing it. I don't care what you say. Or, right, just stop this. Listen to Christmas Past, the episode where they talk about Christmas trees, and then come back to this one. If you want to do it that way, I will not be offended. I understand that there is a great difference in quality between my podcast and Christmas Past. But I'm going to do it anyway. So, here's the deal. We all know, or should know, that people have been celebrating the winter solstice for thousands of years, long before the birth of Jesus. Long, long before. Most people are familiar with Yule, which seems to be the Scandinavian term for Christmas these days, but the term was around before Christianity, and also Saturnalia, which was a Roman festival where they celebrated the god Saturn, but they would celebrate that at the winter solstice. And thousands of years ago, people would bring greenery into their homes to decorate. Now, back then, you couldn't go to Tesco's and buy garlands of tinsel to hang around your house, could ya? No, they didn't have all that stuff. So what you would use is the stuff that was available. Now, it's the middle of winter, so you're only going to be able to decorate with the stuff that is actually alive that time of year. Of course, you've got holly, laurel, ivy, and of course, fir, as well as certain flowers that do bloom at that time of year, and they would be bought in to decorate your house or the town hall. Now, that's where it all started, okay? Where do Christmas trees come into this? Well, this is very interesting because there is a story that dates back to the 7th century. And there are versions of this story, often with legend like this. You get a story and then you read the same story somewhere else and there's slight differences. I'm just going to tell you the best version of this story as I've read it. So in the early part of the 8th century, St. Winifred of Devon was sent into Germany as a missionary. And the aim was for him to convert the pagans to Christianity. That's what missionaries do, of course, you know that. Now, here's the deal. He was originally called St. Winifred. Actually, he wasn't called Saint anything, was he? He was just Winifred at the time. He wasn't a saint. You know, you can't be a saint until you're dead. Did you know that? You know it now. If someone gives you something and you say, oh, thanks, you're a saint. Well, you're saying they're dead. Have you thought about that? Can we move on? So, St. Winifred was sent to Germany. I'm not sure at what point they changed his name to Bonyface. Bony old face. I think it's Boniface. Bonny means pretty, doesn't it? So it could be like pretty face. Pretty boy Boniface was sent to Germany as a missionary. Okay? And he worked tirelessly in Germany, destroying idols and pagan temples across the country and then building churches, Christian churches, obviously, in their place. And he was named the Archbishop of Mainz and founded and restored the Diocese of Bavaria. So around this time, Boniface knew that in winter, the inhabitants of the village of Geismar would gather around a huge old oak tree, which was known as the Thunder Oak, because it was Thor's oak. It was like the god of thunder's oak tree. And at this annual event, they would sacrifice a small child to Thor. And makes you think, doesn't it? If you're watching the Marvel movies, you've got Thor in there, old Chris Hemsworth, looking all handsome with all his muscles, and you're thinking, oh yeah, Thor, and you're the reason for the death of loads of poor children. Is that what you want, is it? You want children sacrificed at your feet? Is that what you want, Chris Hemsworth? Is that what you want, Chris Hemsworth? Probably not, actually. From what I've read, he seems like quite a nice guy. I guess he's not that keen on people sacrificing children in his name. Can we move on? Anyway, pretty boy Boniface knew about this, and he decided he's going to go and convert the village by destroying the oak. So him and a bunch of his mates gather together and journey to Geismar. And just as this guy is about to bring down his axe, chop the sacrifice's head off, or dunno, chop something of it off, St. Boniface runs in with his cross and blocks the axe, and the axe smashes, and Boniface is like, look, I'm here now to take down that tree. And all the villagers are thinking, well, good luck with that. As soon as you try, you're going to get struck down by lightning. So St. Boniface grabs the nearest axe, takes a big swing at the tree. As he swings, this huge whirlwind comes in, lifts up the tree and smashes it into four pieces. And there where the oak stood, a small fir begins to grow. And St. Boniface says, look, this tree has life in the middle of winter. Let this be a lesson to you all. And the shape of it, the triangle, gives us the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And all the villagers are like, wow, that's amazing. Okay, let's all be Christians. Woohoo! Can we have a Christmas party? Let's sing Christmas carols. Let's get drunk. Let's have some Christmas pudding. That sort of stuff, probably. And the wood from the oak was used to build a church in the area. And that is the story. There are various different versions, a little bit more toned down ones. For example, he chops down the tree. There's not some big whirlwind that rips it up and breaks it into four, but he chops down the tree and then he's like, look at this tree over here. It doesn't grow in the same spot. It's just behind it, stuff like that. But, you know, I think the version I told is a bit more exciting. And that is the story of the first Christmas tree. One slight problem. From what I can gather, that story was written in the 1800s. Yeah, 1,000 years after Pretty Boy Boniface was cutting down the old oak tree. So it's probably, possibly not true, but it's a nice story. Tell it to your friends. Now, one quick aside, I've just looked up the term Boniface, and apparently it means fortunate or auspicious. It's not Pretty Boy, but I like my term Pretty Boy Boniface. I've seen pictures of him. He wasn't ugly. Okay, so that is the legend of the first Christmas tree, which is probably not true. Let's talk about the actual history of the trees. Now, here's something you might not know. December the 24th is not just Christmas Eve. It is also the feast day of Adam and Eve. Didn't know that, did you? No, because both Adam and Eve are saints, and that is their saints day. So it's not recognised that much these days, but it is something that was recognised back then. And back then, people would have a thing called a tree of paradise. And it would be often just a branch, like a laurel branch, and they deck it out with apples. Yeah, to represent the tree of knowledge that Adam and Eve ate from. And on Christmas Eve, they would do these paradise plays where they'd act out the story of Adam and Eve. And so those were the first original Christmas trees. Now, originally, these plays would be performed in churches or the town halls. But then people were like, oh, I like the idea of that. And they'd start having these little paradise trees in their own house. And this was around the 12th century. And it's hard to say exactly when the paradise tree transformed into the Christmas tree. But the first reference of an actual Christmas tree in writing that we have was in Lavinia, which is now Estonia and Latvia, and the Brotherhood of Blackheads would have a tree in their guild houses in both Riga, which is now Tallinn in Estonia, and Riga, which is in Latvia. And they'd have these huge Christmas trees, and they'd take it to the town square, dance around it, and they'd set it on fire, like a bunch of vandals. But that would happen. That was back in the early 1500s. And around the same time, there was a Polish pre-Christian tradition. So this was more of a pagan thing, like I was talking about for the Yule and the Saturnalia, where people would bring in a fir tree branch and they'd hang it from the rafters of their houses in the hopes of getting a good harvest. And back around this time, it does sound like the trees were actually being hung, often upside down, in the centre of the room, almost like a chandelier, rather than the trees we're used to nowadays. And also around this time, there are records of a market in Alsace in France. Alsace is a region of France. It's sort of like at the northeast. And interestingly, that's where the dogs Alsatians come from. And they would sell these trees, proper Christmas trees, that people could take into their houses, and they were allowed to be no more than 8 shoe lengths in length, which is only about 4 foot. But also back then, if you weren't hanging them upside down from the ceiling, they were more likely to be on a table rather than some floor-to-ceiling thing, like a massive tree. That's what people would do. They'd have a smaller one, more like a centrepiece on the table. Well, I say centrepiece, it's a bit bigger than the centrepiece. They'd have a special table for it. I don't suppose you're going to be sat around this Christmas tree eating your dinner. Now, another legend that people are aware of is the Christian reformer Martin Luther. And it's interesting because some places I've read that people actually credit him as introducing the Christmas tree, where other places, which is the more common one, Martin Luther is credited with adding candles to the Christmas tree. And the story goes that he was walking through the forest late one night and he looked up through the trees and could see the stars, and it inspired him to go home and place candles around the tree to light it up. It could be true, it probably isn't, but it could be true. He definitely didn't introduce the Christmas tree. I can tell you that for nothing, because that had been going on for long before he came up with the idea. Anyway, that is sort of the basic history of Christmas trees. There are many contradictions as you go through all the information out there about who invented them, where they first were had. It does sound like the real popularity of Christmas trees was sort of around the late 1500s leading up to the 1800s. That's where it was in Europe, particularly Germany. In the UK, people were bringing evergreens into their houses as decorations, like I mentioned earlier. But the first Christmas tree, it seems, was from the German-born Queen Charlotte. And she had a tree in the palace in the year 1800 and had a massive party for all the children. And this became a royal tradition. And every year, Queen Victoria, who was another 20-odd years down the line after the first Christmas tree, she would have a Christmas tree in her room every Christmas. Queen Victoria married Prince Albert in 1841, but in 1848, the Illustrated London News had an engraving of the family, Victoria, Prince Albert, and the children, around a tree, and that just set it off to everyone. If you could afford a Christmas tree, you'd have a Christmas tree. And this was a picture, a very famous picture, where the tree is actually, there's presents around the base of it, and the tree is sat on a table, like I was talking about earlier. Yeah. And as time passed, trees became cheaper and the poorer classes could start to have trees. That was more in the late 1800s. Now, in the United States, there were a lot of German immigrants and they brought the tradition of Christmas trees with them. But it wasn't widespread. It was very insular in the German communities and other people weren't aware of the practice at all. But then in 1850, Goddy Lady's book, God knows what that is, I'm guessing it's some sort of magazine that women would read, they reprinted the picture of Victoria and Albert and the family around the tree, but they made some adjustments to it. Yeah, they removed Albert's moustache and they took away Victoria's tiara to make it look just more like an average couple. And they reprinted that picture. And from that point on, Christmas trees just became incredibly popular. And within 20 years, it was the done thing. And everyone would have a Christmas tree. And that pretty much brings us up to date. Now, there are lots of other things I could talk about the decorations and things like that. And also there are lots of different offshoots where in other countries they do similar things, where the tradition was changed slightly. There's lots of things I could talk about. And at some point I will talk about, but not today. I think we've done enough about Christmas trees. And now it's time to do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
It is important to recognize the amazing ability of alcohol to eliminate the obstacles in our lives. It can remove stress. It can remove clothes. It can remove undergarments and a whole host of other problems as well. So there's an excellent film by Ingmar Bergman from 1983. It is called Fanny and Alexander. It begins with a festive Christmas gathering with all of the feelings we experience at the holidays. Excitement, nostalgia, sadness, love, drunkenness, childlike wonder, and adult disillusionment. It is all there on magnificent display. Then the father dies, and the two children in the movie, Fanny and Alexander, they must leave their home when their mother accepts a marriage proposal from a cold and cruel bishop. You watch the tragic disintegration of this family, and although it is not entirely set around Christmas, with the introduction of the Scrooge-like villain, the story seems straight out of Dickens. So where is the film, Fanny and Alexander, arouses a broad range of emotion over a lengthy 3-hour narrative? It is the title that has me, Do You Hear What I Hear, intrigued. Although the character Fanny has so little to do in this drama compared to her brother Alexander, in real life, her name leads to all kinds of confusion. You see, in the US, a Fanny is the buttocks on a person, a man or a woman. But in the UK, well, only girls have a fanny. It refers to what some Brits might call the front bum. How did we end up with the same word, meaning such biological opposites? Most experts point to a scandalous novel called Fanny Hill, or Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure, by John Cleland. This book was published in two parts, in 1748 and 1749. Fanny spends most of the book having frequent sex, so the assumption was made that since this Fanny was promiscuous, it led to her name being used to refer to the lady parts. No citations or direct evidence are offered to support this definition. It is based on speculation, but this claim has been repeated so often it has been accepted as fact. But other etymologists reject this origin. They say the slang use of Fanny only dates back to the 1830s, which is about 100 years past the publishing of Cleland's erotica. Also, the terms Fanny Fair and Fanny the Fair are used in 18th century songs and not in an obscene context. Plus, this meaning did not appear in the Oxford English Dictionary until 1879. Now, the U.S. use of the word Fanny dates back to World War I. In a diary entry from an American infantryman in 1919, he describes being made to get in a circle, bend over, and being hit with a strap in a game called Bat the Fanny. There is also a mention of the slang term in the hit Broadway play The Front Page from 1928, where a character remarks, "Yeah, parking her fanny in here like it was her house." So, we have one word with two meanings and no origin story. In short, although there are some exceptions, fanny means genitals in British English and butt in the States, which thus does require a travel warning. When visiting the UK, it is advisable not to indicate to the locals that you need to rummage through your fanny pack when looking for your keys, money, or passport. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Ooh, bit risque that one, wasn't it, boys and girls? Yeah, do you know what? We use the term bum bag instead of fanny pack. That's one that I've always found interesting, because I remember an episode of The Simpsons where Marge is referring to something that Lisa's wearing with a starfish on the fanny. And I'm thinking, ooh, fanny. Yeah. It's not used often to describe the ladies' bits these days. More when I was little, I think. It used to be more common. But, you know, we still know what you're talking about. Anyway, thanks for lowering the tone there, Bob. Let's see if I can drag it up a little bit with this.
I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Boys and girls, because we're on the subject of Christmas trees, I thought I'd cover a song about Christmas trees. And this one is one that was mentioned in the quiz last week. And this isn't the first time this has happened, that I find out about a song from the quiz. I don't know if you remember the question, but it was, who spent some of her early years growing up on a Christmas tree farm in Pennsylvania and wrote the 2019 song Christmas Tree Farm, which failed to make the UK top 40? Well, the answer to that one was Taylor Swift. I didn't know about it. I'd never heard of it before. And I thought, do you know what? I better have a listen to that. And I have. And I really like it. And I cannot, for the life of me, understand why it is not more popular. I really can't. Bearing in mind that Taylor Swift, turns out she's pretty much the best-selling female artist of all time. Or at least she's got lots and lots of the records for the most singles, the most chart appearances. I don't know. She's got lots of records, which makes her one of, if not the best-selling female artist of all time. Now, this song, she wrote it in 2019 around the Thanksgiving weekend. Then she recorded it on the 1st of December, and it was released on the 6th of December. Just like that. Bang. That's how she brings out a song. She wrote the whole song herself, and it talks about living on a Christmas tree farm. And I won't lie, when I first listened to it, I thought, oh, this is a bit boring. But then it's got this beautiful hook. They're just moving, oh, wow, I love it now. How can I not love this song? So let me play the bit that I particularly like. Have a listen to this. See, isn't that great? And you would be there too. Love that. Love it. This is why Taylor Swift is so popular. She's a great... I don't care what you think of her. I don't care what you think of her music. She is a great songwriter. That's a fact. And she's also very attractive. One of my mates in particular. Massive fan. Now, in most countries, it seems that there's one chart. In the US, it seems there's dozens. And it says the song debuted at number 2 on the Billboard Digital Songs chart with 26,000 digital downloads. But on the Billboard Hot 100, it came in at number 59. I don't know how they calculate that. I've no idea. Does that include radio play? Is it physical sales? I've no idea. All I know is that on the digital songs chart, it was at number 2, Billboard 59. Around the world, it did fairly well. It seems like in the Netherlands, it got to number 1. I'm guessing they've only got one chart. I don't know. But this is interesting. In Scotland, it got to number 16. In the UK, it got to number 71. I don't know how that's calculated either. 16 in Scotland, 71 in the UK. Don't forget, Scotland is part of the UK, so I've no idea how that works out. But then, in 2020, it was back in the UK charts, got to number 95, which is really, you know, down the charts. But then, in 2021, she re-recorded it as an old-timey version, exclusive to Amazon, and the song got back in the charts in the UK, and it hit the highest point of number 44, which is still pretty far down the charts. But nonetheless, that was the highest chart performance it got. And then the old-timey version in 2022 was released on all streaming platforms. Now, the song is not just about living on a Christmas tree farm. It's also got themes of family, love, and of course, Christmas, which does come in handy when it's a Christmas song. And the video is delightful. It starts off, you've got Taylor Swift in a car, and it's the slow bit at the start of the song. Let me play it for you.
My winter nights are taken up by static stress and holiday shopping traffic. Close my eyes and I'm somewhere else, just like magic.
She's driving along in her car and she's like looking wistfully up. It's very close in on her face. She's looking wistfully up into the sky, and then as the song kicks in, the rest of it is just video footage of her when she was young and her brother living on the Christmas tree farm. And she was tiny and her little brother was even smaller. And it's just nice watching this old footage from the early 90s, their Christmases as they were growing up. Yeah, I reckon you should check it out if you haven't seen it. Now, my personal preference is the old-timey version. I think it sounds more Christmassy. It's really good. It's just a great song. And again, for the life of me, I have no idea why this song has not become a Christmas classic. Because it's modern. We haven't got many modern Christmas classics. And it's glorious. It really is. So, yeah, goodness knows. And especially at the time when Taylor Swift's single sales just kept going up and up and up. In the UK, Taylor Swift's single sales, she's had more number ones in the last sort of 6 or 7 years than she did in the previous 7 or 8 years. So, yeah. Anyway, that's the song. Let me play another little bit for you. And everything is icy and blue. And you would be there too. Under the mistletoe. Watching the fire glow. Telling me I love you. Just being in your arms. Takes me back to that little farm. What a shame that is not more of a Christmas classic. Now let's do this. Bob is back, boys and girls, and I've got to say, Bob, you are looking dapper today, sir.
Thanks, Jack. This episode's Smile of Joy is doubly joyful. We have received a submission from 2 well-known celebrities, and my faves, they are the youngest podcasters in the world, Robin and Juno. Now, the reason why I stress the abundance of merriment being dispensed here is because if you haven't heard their podcast, you have missed a perfect opportunity for a Smile of Joy experience. You can't come away from listening to them without beaming inside. Now, when you want a mood lift or are looking for a delightful change of pace, you give I'm Not Complaining a try. If you want to match the girls' positive charm, you can use their suggestion to spread some cheer to the neighborhood around you. They recommend
painting stones with inspiring messages and leaving them for others to find. This is an activity that they recently did on their podcast, and what they captured is not only the satisfaction that you get from sprinkling happiness throughout your community, but it's also from the anticipation of waiting for it to be found. You want your stone to be discovered and enjoyed, so through a simple act of kindness to others, you also end up sparking a little joy for yourself. And there's nothing wrong with that. If your kids have a secret way to share the love, you report it to Jack, he'll broadcast it to me, and your family can throw its arms around the world.
Do you know what? I'm not just saying this because it was my girls and I that did this, but that really was a lot of fun and a really good one. A couple of years ago, we were walking along and just around the village, and we saw this little stone that someone had painted up. It was really bright and really colourful, and my girls were like, oh, can we take it home? I was like, why don't we leave it there, and then other people get to see it as well. And then finally, I got around to getting a load of stones, and we did it ourselves, and it was cool. Like, we had all sorts of different stuff we drew on them. Robin obviously drew a robin on one. We all had a go. The wife did a couple, I did a couple, the girls did like four or five each. And then we went for a big old walk around the village, just dropping them off in different locations. And now whenever we walk around the village, we have a look to see if they're still there, and some of them are gone and some of them are still about, and it's nice. And I think we're going to do it again soon, and I think you should try it too. It's really cheap, you know, you can get some stones from anywhere, and then a decent set of acrylic paints isn't expensive, and you're good to go. Yeah, thanks for that, Bob. A quick plug for Bob's podcast, because he did a blinding job plugging the girls' podcast there. Well done on that one, sir. Bob's podcast, of course, is Festive Foreign Film Fans with his mate Mark. If you've not been listening to it, listen to it. But lately, the last two episodes, they've been doing their one-year anniversary celebrations. So they've been going back over the films they've watched and talking about their favourite parts of the festive foreign films that they've discussed. Gotta check it out, boys and girls. There's always going to be a link in the show notes, so have a look. Bob will be back in the next episode, but now it's time for this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Here it is, boys and girls. Here it is. The part of the show where you just switch off and act like you're asleep. So, I'm not going to mess around. 10 questions, 10 answers. Question number one. Reaching number 22 in the UK charts, which American had a hit in 2018 called Cozy Little Christmas? Now, I don't know if this is going to help, but I had a look into it, and for my US listeners, it reached number 53 on the Billboard charts. Question number two. Which then poet laureate wrote Mrs. Scrooge, A Christmas Poem? Now, I've never heard of that. I haven't got the slightest idea, but I like the sound of it, and I think I'm going to cover it in the next episode. But right now, it's question number three. In what Asian language is, are you ready? Suksan Wan Kritmat, the Christmas greeting. Do you want to hear that again? I probably said it completely wrong. So I'll say it completely wrong again. Suksan Wan Kritmat. Okay, where's that? Question number something. In which 2002 film does Hugh Grant play Will Freeman, a 36-year-old bachelor who lives off the royalties of the song Santa's Super Sleigh that his father wrote? So, it's not particularly a Christmas film, although I do think it ends on Christmas Day. I could be wrong about that. I think it might. But that's where he made all his money from his dad's song. Next one. The Boxing Day Act of Parliament declared 26th December a public holiday in what decade of the 19th century? This is in the UK, alright? That's why everyone gets the day off on Boxing Day in the UK, because not only is Christmas Day a bank holiday, also Boxing Day is a bank holiday. Next one, true or false one for you. Fidel Castro banned Christmas in Cuba for 30 years. Did he or didn't he? True or false? You tell me. Next one, which British singer had a hit in 2009 called December Song, open brackets, I Dreamed of Christmas, close brackets? Who was that? Next one, what is the traditional decoration on top of a Christmas pudding? What do you put on a Christmas pudding? Tell me now, the decoration, not like what you pour over it. Next one. In which animated film does Tom Hanks provide the voices of a number of characters, including the train conductor? Hey, there's a clue at the end there, isn't there? Goodness me. And the last one. This is a bit tricky, if you're young or if you're not in the UK, which female singer, followed by which male singer, sang the opening two lines of the 1989 Band Aid 2 version of the song, Do They Know It's Christmas? Now, I did cover this song years ago on the show. I don't know if you remember me doing that. You certainly won't remember who the two first singers were. But that was your questions. That's all 10 of them. How'd you get on? Well, you don't know yet, do you? Because I haven't given you the answers. I'm giving them to you now. Question number one. Reaching number 22 in the UK charts, which American had a hit in 2018 called Cozy Little Christmas? That was Katy Perry. And that's one I hadn't heard of either. And it's also one that doesn't get much airplay. So I don't know what's going on there. The following year, 2019, we had the one by Taylor Swift, which I just talked about. The year before that, 2018, Cozy Little Christmas, Katy Perry. Never heard that one either. I might have to, in the next episode, cover that song. Right, question number two. Which then poet laureate wrote Mrs. Scrooge, a Christmas poem? And that is Carol Ann Duffy. Now, if you didn't get that, you really need to sort your act out and take a look at yourself and think, do you really know anything about Christmas? I, of course, didn't have the slightest idea, but I just had a quick gander and it turns out that I recognised the book cover. Yeah, I've seen that book. I think I've read it or scanned through it. So, yeah, I think I might cover that in next episode, and that can be next episode's version of A Christmas Carol. That's not what's happening now. We're still in the middle of the quiz, all right? Can we get on with the next one? We've only covered two answers. This is the third one. In what Asian language is Suk San Wan Kritmat, the Christmas greeting? That was Thai. In Thailand, that's how they say Merry Christmas. Next one. In which 2002 film is Hugh Grant living off the royalties of the song Santa's Super Sleigh? That was About a Boy. Yeah, I knew that one. The Boxing Day Act of Parliament declared the 26th of December a public holiday in what decade of the 19th century? That means it was in the 1800s, right? Can I tell you an interesting fact? In Scotland, Boxing Day was not made a public holiday until 1974. That was the year I was born. Do the maths on that one. Get this, in the UK, the answer to this question, it was 1871, 103 years before Scotland. There was a bloke who was born in England in 1871. He had 103 more bank holidays than some poor bloke that was born the same day in Scotland. That's not actually true, because in Scotland they do have their own bank holidays. I think St. Andrew's Day, the patron saint, I think that's a day off. They get that. We don't get that in the England. Anyway, who cares? It was the 1870s. I thought it was the 1890s, so I got that wrong. Can you believe that, though? Scotland, it's part of the same country. It's part of the United Kingdom. Very interesting fact. Next one. Did Fidel Castro ban Christmas in Cuba for 30 years? He did not. That was false. Next one. Which British singer had a hit in 2009 called December Song, I Dreamed of Christmas? George Michael. And that gets the airplay. It does. Not quite as much as last Christmas. I can tell you that for nothing, kids. But it does get a bit of airplay. Yeah, I know that one. Next one. What is the traditional decoration on top of a Christmas pudding? That is, of course, a sprig of holly. Yep. Maybe two or three leaves of holly and a couple of berries, if you're lucky. Question. Oh, we're up to number nine now. In which animated film does Tom Hanks provide the voices of a number of characters, including the train conductor? The train, yeah. Is it an express train? It is. It's the Polar Express. And the last one, tricky one. It's the first two lines of the 1989 Band Aid 2 version of Do They Know It's Christmas? And that is, it's Christmas time. There's no need to be afraid. That's Kylie Minogue. And then she's joined by Jason Donovan, who comes in with, at Christmas time, we let in light and we banish shade. Yeah. Now, if you're in any other country than the UK or Australia, you probably wouldn't have a clue about that. But back in the late 80s, very late 80s, Kylie Minogue was on a TV show called Neighbours, and her love interest, she got married to Jason Donovan's character. And then she came to the UK and had a massive pop career, still going strong. And so did Jason Donovan. He also came over and had a pop career as well. And then they released this song called Especially For You. Here you go. And that gets a little bit of airplay at Christmas still, because it was, I don't know if it was Christmas number one, but it spent about 3 weeks at number one. Lovely song. They were like this on again, off again, are they, aren't they, real life couple. Yeah. And they were the two that started that song. They were both signed to Stock Aitken and Waterman, because that version of Band Aid was recorded by Stock Aitken and Waterman. Don't you know? Well, you do know, because I just told you. So there you go. That was your 10 questions, your 10 answers. Let's see what I got. I scored 7 on that one. Yeah, I didn't get the Boxing Day one. I didn't get that Katy Perry Cozy Little Christmas. And I didn't know the Poet Laureate. Yeah, that did Mrs. Scrooge, to my shame. But yeah, I hope you did well. I hope you're fit and healthy. Let's do something else. Something like this. This episode's recommendation is a podcast called Off Menu with James Acaster and Ed Gamble. Now, here's the deal. These two are both comedians. I've heard of James Acaster. I might have heard of Ed Gamble, but I wasn't familiar with his work. And this podcast has been going since 2018. They're up to episode 252. And I'm going to read out the blurb as it says it. Comedians Ed Gamble and James Acaster invite special guests into their magical restaurant to each choose their favourite starter, main course, side dish, dessert and drink. Ever wanted to eat your dream meal? It's time to order Off Menu. Now, it's very funny, but it's just interesting as well. You get people coming on just generally talking about the food they like to eat, and they'll share stories about eating out and stuff like that. I am a fan of James Acaster. I think he's had like 4 Netflix specials, maybe more than that by now, actually. He's had a few. He's very funny. Ed Gamble, like I said, not really familiar with his work, but I do like listening to him on this podcast. And the interesting thing is the people they get on there. They get all sorts. When it first started, the guests they'd have on would generally be sort of comedians, people that I might not have heard of, or you might not have heard of, people that the hosts were friends with. But since then, they've had all sorts of people on there, like famous singers and movie stars from all around the world as well. You've got people like Tim Minchin, Ed Sheeran, Josh Groban, Jada Pinkett Smith, Terry Hatcher, Martin Freeman, Stanley Tucci, Paul Rudd, and they've got celebrity chefs on there as well, like Jamie Oliver or Ainsley Harriott. So they're talking about their favourite dishes as well. It's just a fun podcast. To be honest, doesn't need me plugging it, because I think it's constantly in like the top 10 comedy podcasts in the UK. They're doing very well over there. To be honest, they've had around 400 episodes. I was sort of thinking, well, they must be running out of celebrities by now. Maybe at some point I'll get the call. Highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. Anyway, yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. I enjoy it. I've only just started listening to it this last week, even though it's been going 6 years, and it's a bit of fun. So if you're short of podcasts to listen to, why not check that one out? That's Off Menu with James Acaster and Ed Gamble. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you liked learning a bit about Christmas trees. I hope you enjoyed getting all the questions wrong on the quiz. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can go on the website totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas!
I told you I'm your guardian angel. I know everything about you.
Well, you look about like the kind of an angel I'd get.